This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Back in mornings from 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Hope everybody's ready for a fantastic version of Ranked coming up this morning at 9:45, a little over an hour from now. You're right, Brock. Tuesdays are really where Ranked kicks it up a notch.
Well, it's kind of like George Kirby,
yeah,
right, in the playoffs. You get a little extra rest.
That's
as Elo
right.
comes back.
Yep.
And you just let it rip.
Hey, we didn't get to talk. We're going to talk to Divish here in a moment. We didn't spend as much time on that little tidbit yesterday, but I think you're right about that. And I mentioned it that I, you know, there was some criticism. Maybe he should have gone that start in Toronto, et cetera. But after his velo was down the last couple of starts, don't you think that extra rest ended up helping him?
I mean, I think so. Obviously, I think Ryan, former catcher, Haver, Montana, tough guy.
Yes.
You know, watches this team daily, much like Shannon. I think Shannon and Ryan would tell you, yeah, of course it does. For a guy that's never been in that position, that's never had that many innings in his life, right? Just the toll that takes on you mentally, emotionally, physically, everything. And to get a little extra rest, sleep in a little bit, you know, to give your body just a little bit of extra break and juice, sure, I bet you more than anything it helped.
Well, let's talk to Ryan Divish. He, of course, covers the team day in, day out for the Seattle Times. He's kind enough to take a few minutes with us this morning. Ryan, hello. How are you?
Well, I'm not as caffeinated as D-Mac. That guy must have had like 7 Monster Energy drinks before he came on. And can you get him a real microphone? He's like, it sounded like he was in a hallway in Baghdad, you know, when he was doing that.
I think he was just that angry. I mean, he pops. Yeah. Dude pops. What are you going to do?
Mark Rogers is going to be calling into his show later today. Hi, this is Mark in Wisconsin. I have a problem.
Hey, Haver, Montana, closer to Denver or Seattle?
Haver.
Haver. Excuse me.
What the hell is wrong with you, Saul?
I used to live on a street, near a street in Boston, which went by Haver.
I don't care. It's Haver. You know better.
All right. Is it closer to Denver or Seattle?
It's equidistant, basically. 12 hours either way.
Huh.
So it's about 12 hours to Minneapolis as well. So it's
it is closer
right
to the Northwest, the Northwest Territory, though. I think it's closer to the Northwest Territory. I mean, it's right up there by the border to Canada, correct?
Oh, yeah. I'm 25 minutes or 22 minutes from Medicine Hat or from the border and then basically an hour from scenic Medicine Hat, Alberta. I mean, like, I spent all my summers in Alberta playing baseball. I saw Nickelback in a bar once before they became famous. This is how old I am.
Man, that is really the center of it all when you describe it that way. 12 hours from those three cities. Right, kind of the crossroads of everything. Hey, let's talk some baseball.
Yeah, civilization unbound.
What, overall, when you look at this season, Ryan, what did the Mariners accomplish this year?
I think they brought relevance back to an organization that was trending very poorly. I wouldn't say they've completely, you know, redeemed themselves in terms of their reputation around baseball, but they have become relevant again. And they've become relevant in the city, which was a problem at times too. For all the times that you get people at the park in seasons past, it was because it was where you went on a Saturday night or a Friday night when it's nice in the summer. It wasn't about the baseball. It became about the baseball again a lot more. And I think, you know, they've kind of established themselves as kind of an organization that's trying to do things the right way and could be doing it the right way for quite a while. And it hasn't been easy. I mean, I've been covering this team since 2006, and there's been a lot of missteps and, you know, mangled trades and all this other stuff along the way. And, you know, what they've done in the last year or two is really kind of set themselves up to have success in the future. And that's big when you look at the landscape of baseball, because not many organizations can say that moving forward, especially even ones that have been through rebuilds.
Divish, when you're ice fishing in Medicine Hat in late December after Christmas, and you're sitting on the ice and you're looking back, reflecting on a Mariner season, was there a moment or an image in your mind that was most emblematic, kind of capturing the 2022 Mariners?
Huh. First of all, it wouldn't be ice fishing. I'll be in Missoula watching your daughters play basketball.
Yeah!
Hanging out there.
Wow.
I know some people want to say the fight, and I know even a few players say it, but I've talked to a lot of players that say that they were more scared that that fight was going to turf the success that they had started to build than anything with the suspensions and everything else. And they felt lucky
that they got out of there with only with Wyss Trens getting hurt. I mean, the man child was in the middle of that. And he needs to learn that anytime there's a fight, he needs to take the Ohtani treatment and have the trainer hold him back by the dugout. I think, honestly, it was during the 14-game winning streak when they won those games without J.P. Crawford at shortstop, and I think maybe Julio hitting the grand slam, just kind of like that was kind of when you thought, okay, man, these guys are pretty good, and they were banking wins. Because on the June 20th, on June 19th, I mean, I'm legitimately writing or preparing in my mind that I might have to write about a hitting coach. I didn't think they'd fire Scott Service or anything, but a hitting coach or somebody being fired as a sacrificial lamb. And so, yeah, I think somewhere around that 14-game stretch, because that's really where Julio also kind of, you know, set himself apart from the rest of the team. He started to carry them a little bit. And I think that was kind of the defining moment for me more than anything.
What did you see this year that you think is sustainable into next year? And what did you see that maybe will be a little bit more of a challenge to sustain next year?
I think the pitching, the Mariners are good at developing, building, finding, you know, improving pitching. You know, the pitching is what carried them, and I think that's sustainable. You look at in their organization, beyond what they have on the 40-man roster, their top arms or their top prospects are all arms. You know, Emerson Hancock, there's a kid named Bryce Miller who throws 100. You know, they have a bunch of different arms coming up that's where they're really stacked. Position player-wise, they're not. I think that's what's sustainable, because they just have enough depth and enough talent, and they've proven that they can even go out and get guys off the scrap heap or guys that are kind of maybe, you know, mid-level with talent, and they can make them better. But the hitting and kind of what they did this year to be in games, you know, I know we said last year the one-run games aren't sustainable, but it just isn't. And also the health of the pitching. I know you mentioned it the other day. They went the whole entire season without a starting pitcher missing a start due to injury. That just doesn't happen very often. And you worry about Logan Gilbert, George Kirby, Andrés Muñoz throwing more innings than they ever have at higher leverage situations than they ever have, how that's going to affect them next year. But I do think, like, winning games by one runs and the offense that they're rolling out, that's not sustainable. I mean, they need to have a little bit more consistency. There's just, again, we saw towards the end of the year, there were a lot of holes in their lineup, and they became exposed.
He is the mayor of Havre. He is Ryan Divish for the Seattle Times. He does cover these Mariners, has since 2006, Ryan. So Marco Gonzalez said earlier this year that man-child, Julio Rodriguez, was the greatest baseball player his eyes had ever seen. From your perspective, where is Julio on your list?
Well, in a Mariners uniform, he's probably the best I've ever seen at his prime. I mean, I saw Griffey when he was the shell of Ken Griffey. And I guess in 2000, when I was an intern at the News Tribune, I saw Alex. But Julio's the best player I've ever covered on a day-to-day basis. It's not even close. I mean, what that guy can do and that guy's ability to rise to the moment and rise to the occasion. I mean, like, honestly, if he doesn't hit the ball so damn hard, they win that game. He hit it too hard. It hit the wall. I mean, it damn near went through it. But if it's a foot higher, they win the game. It's a totally different thing. I mean, so he's the best. It's not even close. I mean, he's going to be – and the one thing with him, like all great players, he's not just satisfied. He's already probably thinking about what he wants to do to improve and be better. And, I mean, his commitment to getting better – is something I've never seen from a kid his age.
What do you mean by 19, that? Give us some insight into that. Like, you know, I mean, we hear that, and I think we've heard that enough from so many different people. But to hear that from you,
like a Russell Wilson level of commitment, or what?
Whoa.
No, because it's not eyewash commitment where he tells you about it. He just does it. Like, right, that's the thing about Russell. Russell always tells you how hard he's working. Julio is always just working hard and doing it himself. We don't really know, but you just see it. Like, he does stuff like as good as he still did all of his defensive work, extra and whatever. You know, he put in the time in the cages. It's kind of interesting. He stopped taking batting practice on the field as much because he felt like, you know, it was getting away, hitting homers, whatever. He just wanted to focus on his approach and stay healthy. You know, the conditioning, he still lifts every day. He does everything he's supposed to do. That usually takes players 2, 3, 4 years in the big leagues to figure out how to be good on a daily basis, how to stay healthy on a daily basis. This kid already understands it, and he's played, you know, one season. You know, and he has some great kind of examples to follow, and like Haniger and those guys. but that's how he operates. Like, he's just not satisfied. I mean, like, this, what the Mariners never told him to get faster. The Mariners never told him, hey, you need to drop some weight or trim your body up or get faster so you can play center field. This kid assessed the situation and said, I think I can be faster. I think I can play center field. That job is mine. I'm going to do it on my own. I have the people in place to do it. Like, they never told him to do that. They want him to be good. They have their plan, but he took it to another level. And that's what he does all the time with everything, because he doesn't just want to be good. He wants to be great. Like, he just has that in him.
Hey, speaking of hard work, where was Jesse Winker this last weekend? I mean, just not seeing him introduced with his teammates, et cetera, where was he?
I think he was home. So I was curious because he didn't make the trip when we went to Toronto and then Houston. And I asked, and they said, well, he wanted to get a second opinion on his neck. And so, and then I thought, and I asked one of the guys, well, you think you'll be back in Seattle? Like, maybe, yeah, I don't know. But I think they probably just told him to go home. I mean, it speaks to that. I mean, I think by the end of the season, it's what they would, you know, scouts call a tired act. Like, I just think some players, some of his teammates were done with him. Were just tired of putting up with him. And, you know, I think the team is frustrated with him. Everything that Mitch Haniger does to prepare for a game and to get ready, Jesse Winker's kind of the opposite. I mean, I can say it. If he may not like it, but I think he's not very physically strong. I don't think he puts in the time to be better defensively or to have a better arm or any of the work that should be done. And really, it is counter to what has made this team great. This team prepares like no team, you know, the last few years, this team prepares more than any team I've ever seen on a daily basis to be ready to play that day. And he doesn't. He doesn't always, you know, it's just not there. And it's noticeable. Players notice it. I think part of it is, too, when he didn't post for that doubleheader and guys were having to play 18 straight innings, I think that bothered some players. You know, and once you lose your teammates, you know, why be there? So there's going to be some hard conversations either with Jesse from this front office or they're just going to move on. And Scott Service has said that a lot of times. Like, we have a plan. We have a way we play. We have a way we prepare. If you don't like it, we'll find somebody else that does. If you can't do it. And, I mean, like, Scott's preached it all the time, but, like, it takes guys like Haniger, Marco, Julio, all these guys to embrace it and make it, you know, you can tell them all you want, but unless the players do it, it's not going to matter. They do it. They believe that's why they're good. And Jesse Winker just hasn't followed through on that a lot.
Well, on the opposite end of that spectrum are not just those guys. And I know as a former catcher, and I think you broke the news about Cal Raleigh. He told you specifically what he was dealing with his thumb. I guess give us some perspective as a guy that played the position, played the game, and had the story on Cal's significant injury. Walk us through the magnitude of that.
Can't question that kid's toughness. I can tell you that. I mean, like, you know, playing crappy level NAIA baseball, I dealt with that a lot. And, you know, had some issues with that where you get jammed and it never gets better. But if you recall in that game, he took a foul tip off that thumb so hard it shattered the plastic protector inside the thumb of his glove. That's how hard he took it. That's how much torque was on his thumb. When he got done and he kind of showed us, it was, his thumb looked disgusting. And it was just, you know, like, I don't know how he played. And you could see they had left the patches on where they were running stem on it in between innings, trying to keep it, you know, like the E-stem on it to try and keep it healthy. I mean, like, they're just doing everything they can to piece it together. He played like that for weeks. It's also a lesson. Don't dive headfirst into first base ever.
Ever.
That's, you know, especially when you're as big as a tank, maybe don't do that. But it speaks, and you know what it did? It commanded a level of respect in that clubhouse that maybe, you know, I they already respected him anyways, but, you know, now it's unquestioned, like, who he is and what he's about. And, like, it elevates him to a level of leadership. Like, if he says something about you need to play or you need to do this, you need to post, if it's coming from him, you know, he can back it up by what he's done.
Hey, I don't know. You may disagree with me on this, but I certainly hope that we hear at some point that Ty France was dealing with a wrist issue down the stretch. And I don't mean that he was injured, but that he was still hurt and playing through it. And he said repeatedly that wasn't the case. Everyone else seemed to think that wasn't the case. But it's the only explanation I can come up with for how his game just completely turned the moment he came back from that wrist injury.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, like, if he was dealing with the wrist injury, this Mariners kind of their medical staff now, you don't get to do BP and you have to have treatment. You have all this stuff. Like, there's no, you know, I'm going to tough through it and put some tape on it. They have all this new technology now to get you ready, and you're doing it before games, after games. If you want to play through it, they have stuff to get ready. I mean, Ty was just doing normal stuff. If you look at it, the time, you know, he's got kind of a funky swing. The timing on his swing looked really off for a while. And then also, like, he lost his approach. He expanded the strike zone. He was swinging at everything. I mean, everything. You could have rolled it up there and he probably would have taken a hack. And once you get caught up in that and you're trying to chase hits and chase results, it's hard to get back. When he was at his best, he understood where he was going to hit the ball or what pitches he wanted to hit and cover him. But he just was swinging early, swinging at everything. And I think that's as big of a deal. I mean, maybe he's hurt. He gave no indication of that. Nothing we saw said he's hurt. And they wouldn't really just let him, you know, if he was hurt, they wouldn't just let him kind of operate.
Maybe the word isn't hurt, Ryan. Maybe the word is hurting, if that makes any sense. And that's kind of been my experience watching guys come back from those wrists and fingers and stuff. They're not hurt, but they're hurting. And it seems to just affect them longer than
it's like your golf swing, Salk, you know, with all your ailments and your bone spurs so and your knots and everything else. Like you're
everything.
Yeah, you're either in rhythm or you're not.
So, as my college baseball coach said to me, Salk's biggest issue is loft. I don't mean on the club, but lack of freaking talent.
Both things
are
true.
When it comes to wrist, and Salk, you were around the Garcia Parr deal, sometimes it isn't that it hurts. It's that they're swinging to protect it.
Right.
Because they're afraid to really let it go.
Yep.
And maybe that's the case. I just know, like, for a while there, we went back and looked at his swings outside the strike zone. They had increased so much compared to what he was doing when it was early. And I mean, that's what it does is it makes you question what his role is. Is this exposed him? Is this how you get him out? How does he get back? Can he adjust and be the hitter he was in the first half? Or is this always who he's going to be? It's going to be up and down, because he'd never been up and down in his time with the Mariners other than the one time he was hurt. He was always pretty consistent, but we saw more swing and miss and more strikeouts from him than we ever have. And I'm sure that's very concerning for the Mariners.
Two last quick ones for me, Divish. Number one, Captain Tom's going to be hunting around Haver. Any good place, breakfast place, brunch place? That's true. I mean, it's a true question. Any good spot you'd recommend in Haver?
There's a place called Bow and Marrow. It's a steak place. It's okay. I mean, but it's Haver, Montana. You know, you just never know. Oxford Bar, go get a pork chop sandwich. Just, you know, make sure you don't act too Seattle-ish in there. They don't like that.
No, okay. He's not. He's up north. He's more Marysville in his roots.
How does Haver compare to Libby?
It's about the same.
I can attest that.
It's just straight up the same.
We have a little bit, a few more mountains around, but it's about the same.
Yeah. Okay. And then the last thing, I did some digging here, all right? And I don't know where you're going to fall on this, if you're going to be on Bob Stelton's side or Mike Salk's side. I did some digging. It looks like one of the social media managers of the Houston Astros sites from Whitefish. I don't know if that surprises you or not. Little uppity.
Really?
No, actually not. But I was just trying to stir the pot. what do you think of the old Astros social media crew taking shot after shot after shot?
I mean, like, you know, it's interesting. And if you would have said he was from Montana State, then I would have, you know, probably gotten fired up. But I don't know. I mean, like, I guess it offers some bulletin board material. But, like, you know, the thing is beat him and shut him up. That's the best way to do it. You know, and that's the thing. And Scott has said it. It runs through the Astros, and they've got to find a way to beat that team. And really that means adding some offense where you can. And, you know, just kind of being a little bit more offensively diverse, I think, is what they need to do. I thought there were times they were like that, but they just the old issue of too many swings and misses came back to bite them at the worst time. Mm-hmm. But I mean, honestly, they were three at bats away from winning that series, sweeping it. You know, it's pretty crazy if you think about it.
Yeah. Hey, Ryan, good stuff, man. It's been too long. Thanks for coming on with us, and let's make sure we do it again soon.
Yeah, Salk, you gotta have Brock take you to Missoula for a Lady Grizz hoops game.
Waiting for an invite. Yep. You know, just waiting.
Salk
for
loves Missoula. Yeah,
I love Missoula. I love Montana. I love Missoula. I loved Whitefish when I went there. I'm even like Bozeman when I went there. I went to Helena. Dude, I'm practically a Montana guy.
We don't talk about Bozeman.
No.
The only thing that the show Yellowstone got right is that everybody from Montana hates Bozeman and makes fun of it. That's the only thing correct about that show Yellowstone.
All right. Goodbye, Ryan.
Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you very much. The great Ryan Divish, the Seattle Times, kind enough to take a few minutes.